This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be the Buttle Show, but now it's the K. Show.
Never. Actually a lie. Not true.
Never.
Never was the Buttle Never. Show. Not even for 5 minutes. Although, I'll tell you what. Jets fans feeling so good, they might call it the Buttle Show.
Why not? Whatever gets it done. What a football day.
What a football day. Peter Rosenberg, Don LaGreca, Michael K. will be joining us shortly.
And then...
What a day. And we're going to get to the Mets here in a moment. But, Don, how fun was yesterday for New York football fans?
Oh, it was a lot of fun, especially for Jet fans, because that's your future quarterback. And you saw him in a big moment. Now, the Steelers aren't very good, and that's not a difficult place to win like it was back in the day. But still, it's a road game, and he was almost perfect on those two possessions. So, hey, listen, you feel good about your quarterback. Get him playing. So now these now it means so. If Flacco had done that, it'd be like, so right. What? We have no future. But we've got the kid doing it. Giants finding a way. And Bears aren't bad. I mean, beatable, and the Giants beat them. I don't know who's going to play quarterback in London. With Jones hurt, and Tyrod Taylor did have a concussion, and I got to think in this era, especially what happened with Tua last week, you're going to err on the side of not playing someone who suffered a concussion.
Well,
so we might see a little about Davis Webb.
What do we know about Jones right now?
We haven't heard. I mean, it's only Monday, but it didn't look great. He couldn't come back in and play quarterback. He went out and lined up as a wide receiver. You know, so, I mean, he still has time, I guess, to get better. But do you really want him on one leg?
Yeah,
that's their biggest weapon right now is him running the football.
The only other thing is that Saquon Barkley, man. I'm not ready to call Saquon Barkley, you know, Aaron Judge or anything. But I will say he's showing something this year.
Well, no Giant has rushed for this many yards in the first 4 weeks of a season. And we're talking about, you know, Joe Morris. We're talking to Rodney Hampton.
Tiki.
You know, Tiki Barber, right? You know, Frank Gifford.
We're Brandon talking Jacobs. About
Brandon Jacobs. Yeah. You know, listen, it's a nice list of people, and he's having that kind of a year. But then you turned on the ESPN at 7. And if you happen to be a Met fan like me, yeah, your spirits were dampened for sure.
So let's talk about this Mets weekend. How would you describe the overall play of the Mets, who, of course, lost all three?
I'm going to tell you.
Go ahead.
The reason I'm not jumping off a ledge, the reason that I'm not like completely and utterly disgusted, is I think clearly they lost to a better team. And when you look at that series, didn't it look like the better team won the games?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly. So the Mets right now are not a consistent offensive team. They tried Alvarez 0-for-8 with 3 strikeouts, and you could see they're really missing Marte. And they're really missing, you know, having a really good right-handed bat in that situation. They tried Alvarez. It didn't work.
The Alvarez at bat on Friday night when he threw the bat.
Yeah.
Like, he was so aggressive. He was so it was a big spot.
I think he's going to be good.
But he's a kid. It was a huge spot to
get
thrown
into. And I don't
want
to kill the Mets because I don't think Darren Ruff would have done anything anyway.
Right. No, it's worth the shot.
So, but the point is that we can talk about DeGrom losing and Scherzer losing and Bassett losing. They scored 7 runs in 3 games, Peter. 7 runs. They scored the first run of a game in 2 of them, and they had a lead in all 3. But they only scored 7. And Austin Riley hits a home run in all 3 games. Olsen hits a home run in all 3 games. The Braves' bullpen was tremendous. I mean, really, you look at it, yeah, they blew a 10.5 game lead starting June 1st. Do you realize the second half of the season projected out for the Mets, just the second half, would have been a 95-win team? That's a wild card team. The Braves' second half, if he extrapolated it out to a full season, would have been 114 wins. The Braves just proved they were better.
Well,
so, and then you just saw it, and it's frustrating because all the Mets had to do was win one game. Win one game, and they would control their own destiny to win this division. They couldn't do it. They scored 7 runs. The Braves were just a better team.
It stinks,
but it's fact.
I tend to look at it the way you do, and I understand. We'll talk to you guys about it. 1-800-919-3776. Are you standing on the ledge, or are you calm? To me, Don, it's like the expectations this year were not for this. You were not thinking when this season started, we better get to 100 games. We better beat the Braves. Nobody was expecting the Mets to finish ahead of the Braves. And, Don, I think the only thing that happened was the Braves the Braves tricked everyone with their first half.
Like they did the year before.
They were just, and by the way, they know we did it last year, won the World Series. This year we take our time, get everyone back who we need to get back. Oh, don't worry about it, we're good. So while I understand the gut reaction to kill the Mets, and this is such a Mets thing, I get it. I totally get it. But realistically, was it a classic Mets thing? They completely overachieved this season, and in the final series with their division rival, who's a better baseball team, they got beat. I'm with you, Don. I don't think you're jumping off a bridge because of this.
But you're still massively disappointed because all through the year, especially in the summer, we figured that winning the division was a foregone conclusion. When they took 4 out of 5 from the Braves at Citi Field and Timmy Trumpet and all the stuff that went on there, you're thinking this team's going to fly, that this team's not going to be caught. It was okay to think that. And then the Braves went on a toot that just shows you that they're the better team. Take a look at the Mets. Listen, if you're a diehard Met fan, there's games that you kick yourself. The game in Oakland when they had a 3-run lead for DeGrom and DeGrom didn't have it. And there was a loss to Pittsburgh. There's a couple of losses where you say, boy, if they had just won that game. Take a look at what the Braves have done since June 1st. They played out of their minds. So the Mets didn't blow it, but still it's frustrating because your one went away this weekend. From controlling your own destiny was right there. And you don't know what's happening with DeGrom next year, right? Scherzer's another year older. You know, they got to get Diaz. So everybody says, well, it's growing pains. And I want to believe that, but things kind of change quickly in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know if you're going to get an opportunity to go out there and win 100 games again. So that's the frustrating part. So it's one of those days, Peter, where it's hard to rip the Mets, but at the same time, there is disappointment because it felt like you had the division. It was right there. It was in your grasp. You were holding on to it, and you got it whacked out of your hand. You didn't cough it up on your own. The Braves just took it from you.
Well, listen, you're everything you just said, Don, makes perfect sense. And I agree. I totally understand why you'd be incredibly upset. I guess just for me, as an outside observer, not a fan, I didn't expect that the Mets would just roll. I assumed that what we would get from the Braves in this time of the year, I assumed it would be this. And the fact that, listen, they're still coasting into the playoffs. Listen, it's a disappointing way to get there. But the playoffs were never in doubt. I think about the expectations you had for the whole year. It's really kind of a glass half full, half empty thing. Now, if you want to get into specifics, the fact that you lost games with DeGrom and Scherzer back-to-back, that's upsetting.
Yeah.
That piece. But how would you describe the performance of DeGrom on Friday?
I mean, listen, it could have been better. I mean, but when you're not getting a lot of runs.
He's right in that same range, right?
You got a quality start.
Right, it's quality, but it's not DeGrom.
But you're hoping when you get DeGrom, you're going to get 7 shutout innings and you find a way to win the game, and they didn't. And the same with Scherzer. They were good but not great, and they needed to be great. And the Braves' starting pitching was better, and they hit. That's the thing. The Mets scored 7 runs in 3 games. Is that going to be enough to win all 3? No. But the hope was just at least getting one, especially when you had a lead in all 3. I mean, yesterday, you're up 3-1, you're thinking, all right, maybe – and it just never materialized.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting with DeGrom and Scherzer because you can't be surprised. If someone were to tell you, okay, we're getting DeGrom and Scherzer the first 2 games against the Braves, but they're going to be – it may be a little – this may be overstating it, but they're going to be sort of pedestrian for them those 2 days. You would have probably said that's not going to be enough. This offense isn't good enough to sustain run-of-the-mill performances.
And listen, they lost Marte – And Marte was a big loss for this team, the ball player. We talked about him all year. He was such a contributor to this team offensively. To not have him hurts. But if you want to be critical of the Mets and not just sit here and throw roses at the feet of the Braves, did the Mets do enough at the deadline that they had to rely on a 20-year-old rookie to help them out right-handed? They got it wrong with Darren Ruff. He was awful. Vogelbach was nice. Nice player. He had a home run. But was he great? Was Naquin great this year? You know, so did they do enough at the deadline to help this offense that we knew was not great? It was a good offense. And here's the way I look at it, and no offense to McNeil. He has a chance to win the batting title. This offense is driven through Lindor and Alonso. And then you take Marte out. Nimmo's a nice player. They've got some nice players, but you know, when you're relying on those two guys and they don't come through for you, you're not going to get a lot of runs, and that's what killed them. So we can complain about, you know, the starting pitching not we thought. They lined up their three best starters. Braves beat them, and that's just the way it was. So Braves are a good team. I tip my cap to them, but did they do enough at the deadline to try to improve the offense? And Alvarez, I think, has got a tremendous future, but certainly starting out 0-for-8 with three strikeouts is not the way you want to do it in three of the most meaningful games the Mets have played in a decade.
What's the belief on Marte for the playoffs?
Well, he can't hold a bat. I mean,
he can't do anything, right?
It doesn't sound like it's going to happen. Maybe sometime. I guess anything can change. But Buck gave the update. What was it? I guess after the game Saturday or last night. I don't know. All the games kind of mesh into each other. But it didn't sound like he can close his hand on the bat. So until that changes.
That sort of means that if you don't win a series, it's hard to imagine a world.
Maybe you hope. Now, listen, can they beat the Padres? Sure. I mean, they lost the season series to them. But, you know, the Padres haven't done anything that the Mets can't match. And all three games are at Citi Field. And the one thing I will say, get it over with. Braves are winning the division. Have them beat the Marlins tonight. Be done. So that I don't have to mess with possibly pitching DeGrom on Wednesday and losing him for the wild card. Don't even tease me, okay? Braves clinch tonight and be done. Don't make Wednesday meaningful, Peter. And I got to roll DeGrom out there. He pitches a no-hitter, but the Braves win anyway. And now you don't have DeGrom for one of the
it's
three games.
It's such a great point.
Just end it now. The misery. The Braves are going to win. Just do it tonight. And then you got your three pitchers to go against the Padres, and then you hope to get to the Dodgers. And if you get to the Dodgers, you're not set up to beat them because you won't have your starting pitchers that you want. But can you really complain if you're in the league divisional series?
Well, listen, we were about to go to the phones, but I feel I'd be remiss if we didn't go to Michael Kay ask his thoughts on the big weekend as the technology gets fixed in Texas. What's up there, Kayster?
Well, I was shocked because I thought they'd take one game. And, you know, everybody's talking about they didn't get enough at the trade deadline. But if you're the Mets, you set up those three pitchers and you expect to get one, maybe two wins, and they all pitch poorly. Now, the offense didn't do much either. Francisco Lindor, I believe, was 2-for-13. So their shortstop and their first baseman outplayed the Mets shortstop and first baseman. So the Mets are not winning the National League East. That's all there was to it. And I'm sure you guys spoke about this. They've made their trek through the playoffs completely difficult. Because if they play the San Diego Padres, they've never found a way to beat Yu Darvish. And all you need two wins. And you don't even know what you have now when you come to Jacob DeGrom. You have no idea. You just don't. So you start the first game with Scherzer against Darvish, and you hope you win that. And then, Don and Peter, I think the strategic thing the Mets have to figure out, who do you start in the next game? Do you start Bassett, hope to win that game? And then maybe play the DeGrom in the first game against the NLDS. But they've made it very difficult on themselves, getting through the Padres, who are getting hot at the right time, and then having to get through the Dodgers before you even get to the National League Championship Series. That was a really disappointing weekend. I just don't even know how to explain it.
No, that was clearly disappointing. And they tried something with Alvarez, didn't work, 0-for-8 with three strikeouts. They had a lead in all three games. Michael couldn't hold it, but you can't score seven runs in three games and expect to do well. But you do expect more from DeGrom and Scherzer, but offensively they didn't give you much. And Michael, I watched every pitch of that series. They lost to a better team. Braves are just better than they are. I mean, maybe that wasn't the case in August, but clearly Atlanta, I was telling Peter earlier in the show, Michael, if you extrapolated out their second half to a full season, they would have won 114 games. I mean, right. The Mets, I mean, somebody on Twitter just mentioned the Mets blew it because they got swept by the Cubs. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Nationals, lost a game to the Pirates. But if you look at the Mets' second half, they played well. But the Braves played out of their minds. And you saw this weekend, Michael, I know you couldn't watch a lot of it because you had games to call. The Braves just looked like the better team. Their bullpen was spectacular. I mean, we talk about Kenley Jansen, and I do think that he'll be a problem for the Braves at some point, but he was outstanding. He had a save in all three games. If you told me if that was possible, Michael, do you believe he's blown half of his saves this year? Half of his opportunities in one-run save situations. He's like 6-for-12, but he pitched brilliantly this weekend. Only the second time this year he's had to get a save on three consecutive nights and did it with the Mets top of the order in the ninth inning last night.
So, I don't even know why the Braves continue to run him out there. I mean, Raisel Iglesias is a better pitcher.
Who was acquired, right? So, and it's the other thing, too, is that could the Mets have done better at the deadline? Probably. Because I don't know if it was right, at looking back at it now, having a kid 20 years old being in that situation, and it seemed like every time he came up was in a big spot.
And he swung at the first pitch each time. Yeah. So I know he was the top prospect in the minors, and it's easy to beat a Monday morning quarterback. Yeah. But Ruff was bad. Vientos, I guess they didn't trust. But you can't bring up a kid because even the best rookies, they're going to have an indoctrination period. You're throwing him into that scene?
Oh,
In retrospect, that was awful.
No, it was. But again, the reason they had to do that is because they screwed up on Ruff. And listen, Vogelbach was nice. He wasn't great. Naquin was nice. He wasn't great. Givens was nothing really any great shakes out of the bullpen. They didn't do much at the deadline. So if you want to beat them up for that, hey, if you want to make this a day where you want to beat the Mets up, it's going to be hard to fight you off. They had a 10.5 game lead on May 31st. But I don't have the same feeling I did in 98 when they lost out to the Cardinals, because in 85 when they won 98 games, it didn't go because they went home. I mean, so they're still in the playoffs, still something to root for, but it was a kick in the groin. Certainly, you figured they'd get one. They didn't do it, but Braves are really, really good and very, very dangerous in these playoffs because it's really coming together for them.
You know, I really thought Buck said all the right things too. You know, this is not conditional. This is unconditional. And I can't really buy into the narrative that the Mets choked, because when they were up by 10.5 games, I believe they're 63-44 since then. That's not choking. That's 19 games over .500. The other team is playing at a world record pace. Now, you want to really be nitpicky? They didn't really take care of business against the bad teams. They just didn't. And so that put them in a situation where, you know, they had to win at least one game this weekend. But you play to that level, Don and Peter, and you just have to win one game. One. And you couldn't do it? Well, then you're not good enough, right?
No, that's ultimately how I feel, is they lost to a better team. I looked at the Braves. I said, the Braves are just better. You know, Riley hits a home run all three games. Olsen hits a home run in all three games. They got the tremendous the bullpen situationally, fielding. Like, they just look like the better team. They did. Yep. And they were the better team in the second half of the season. So, but as I told Peter earlier, Michael, still, after they took 4 out of 5 from the Braves in August at Citi Field, did you ever dream that this team wasn't winning the division?
No.
Like, so as much as I don't want to kill the Mets and say that they didn't blow it per se, it's still colossally disappointing, because it felt like that trophy was cemented on the mantle, that they were going to win the division. It was done. Even as you were going down the stretch, it still felt like whenever they had to answer the call, they did. And
it's
now
amazing the hold that the Braves have over the Mets. It's amazing. We talked about 98 on Friday, right? Where they needed to win one game, and they got swept then, and they got swept again. And this is a good team. But I think one thing that we're really underselling, they really missed Starling Marte a lot.
No, of course. Of course they missed him. You don't want it to be about one player, but he's a big player. Let's face it, Michael, this is not a great offensive team.
No.
Despite the fact that McNeil may win the batting title and Alonso will win the
RBI
title.
By the way, the only Met offensive player who showed up, McNeil.
Yeah, he did. But unfortunately, this is a game about home runs, and he did hit a home run. But the idea, this offense is driven by Lindor and Alonso. That's what really drives it, and how they can drive in runs, and they mess with things, having McNeil bat clean up because he was hot. You know, but the idea is that as good as he is, as good as Lindor is, as good as Alonso is, when you look at it, Michael, this is not a great offensive team. This is a team that's supposed to do it with their starting pitching, timely hitting, which they got all year long. Well, let's be honest. DeGrom and Scherzer were not DeGrom and Scherzer. They were okay. They gave him a chance to win, but they weren't lights out. Bassett was awful. Bassett was spotted at a 3-1 lead. Couldn't get out of the third. So they didn't get the pitching that they hoped for. They didn't get the hitting that they hoped for. 7 runs in 3 games. And now you see why the Braves are the defending World Series champions, Michael. They smelled blood, and they took care of business.
Let's take some phone calls before we break, and we will start with Marvin in the car. Marvin.
How you guys doing? It's disappointing. It's disappointing to see what happened over the weekend, but I kind of wanted to – I have a couple points. One is I kind of did feel like it was fool's gold with the Mets winning 4 out of 5 against the Braves when they were at home. And every time I saw the games, I was just waiting for a breakdown to happen.
Why?
I just felt like the Braves were still – the Mets weren't really the Mets, you know. I felt like the way the Mets are now this year, I really didn't believe it, you know. I just felt like they were going to collapse like they did, you know, the previous years when they were winning the division for 3-4 months out of the year and then for them to collapse. So I am happy for what they were able to accomplish this year. But for the Mets to lose the way they did, it kind of was just a sobering moment. Like, all right, I guess this is really what the Mets are. In reference to the Braves, you know, they're
But you know, Marvin, you're like chattering on, and you're not giving me a reason why you felt like that. You sound like a Met fan with PTSD. I mean, what did they do that would tell you that this wasn't real?
See, that's,
again, the so-called collapse. They played 19 games over 500.
See, this is why I get irritated about the whole typical Mets. What? Well, they're not as good as the Braves. You know what? There's a lot of teams not as good as the Braves. Now, I'm not going to tolerate this for much longer, you know, going into next year with an owner that can spend money and try to improve on the deficiencies. But you play 162 games for a reason. And it wasn't that the Mets couldn't handle it or succumb to the pressure. This is a team that just unfortunately just not as good as the Braves. We thought they were after winning 4 out of 5 from them at Citi Field, but then they lost 3 out of 4 in Atlanta. If you remember, Michael, they dropped 6 of the last 7 games against Atlanta.
Yep.
So you kind of got a sense as the Braves were getting hot, they were never losing any games. And that if you want to say it was inevitable because the Braves were going to show that they were the better team, but to sit there and say, well, it's just, you know, typical Mets, then you weren't watching them all year. This is still a good team, Michael, and they're still in the playoffs. And I expect them to beat the Padres. Lose to the Padres, then they don't have any kick coming. I'll be the first one on the air to absolutely destroy them if they lose to the Padres. And then it would be a lost season for me. But as long as they're still alive and they can beat the Padres and then go up against the Dodgers and see what they can do, this is not the time to be sitting here talking about typical Mets. Because the typical Mets would be sitting home watching the playoffs instead of participating in it.
Now, let's take a brief timeout. We're going to talk in the next half hour to the Jets head coach, Robert Saleh. You definitely want to hear from him. His team is 2-2. The Giants are 3-1.
Wow.
We'll talk to Steve Young in the 5 o'clock hour. Aaron Judge still searching for number 62. Will he get it in these 4 games in Texas? We shall see. So a lot of stuff to do. Saleh's coming up in the next half hour, so stay tuned. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you. You're watching us on the YES Network and listening on the ESPN app at 98.7 ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan in Sunnyside, you're next.
Hey, how's it going, this Evan? First time caller, long time listener. Love all you guys. Nice. Thank you. I just wanted to call in and be a little bit more positive and kind of elaborate on what Don was saying before. I think this whole season, everything has gone as expected. Obviously, you had those injuries to certain players, and the Mets recovered from it. But I think this was a wake-up call this weekend, and I think it's going to re-energize the clubhouse, especially with leaders like Max Scherzer on the team now. I don't think it's going to be something that crumbles us, and I'm excited moving forward. I'd be lying if I wasn't disappointed last night, but now that I've woke up and thought about it, I feel good moving forward, and I think we're going to make a run. And with having to beat the Dodgers, I think it makes the run even more special if we actually pull it off. Thanks,
well,
guys.
I hear what you're saying, Evan, but the one thing I would disagree with, you need a wake-up call going into Atlanta in front of three full houses, and you have to win just one game, and you have the three best pitchers on the mound. Why would you need a wake-up call? That doesn't make sense. I mean, will they get better if they get back Marte? Yes. That's a big loss. But Marte's absence in the lineup, Don, did not impact the way Scherzer or Bassett pitched. Now, you can't say that DeGrom was terrible, but, you know, he gave up home runs. That's not DeGrom.
Back-to-back home runs was the first time since 2019. That's not the time to do it. But you line it up the best way you can. Now, we've seen DeGrom pitch big in big spots. We've seen Scherzer win a championship, right? We've seen him pitch big in big spots. So I don't think those guys folded under the pressure. It's just that you put yourself in a situation where you just weren't good enough, you know, and you're relying on these pitchers. But we've talked about it all the time. So you're not going to be lights out every single time, and you could be a little worried about DeGrom being, of all times, very hittable the last four or five outings. He hasn't been lights out in a while.
Let's go to Robert in Queens. Robert.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Very disappointed. Very disappointed what happened with the Mets this weekend. Never, I don't think you could ask any Mets fan if they would have thought we wouldn't have won at least one game. Really disappointing. And I just have to say, you know what, the Braves lose a big part of their outfield last year. They went out, they got some guys, and they plugged those guys in, and those guys hit, and they came through. Yeah, we didn't have the guys. I really don't want to see Naquin anymore. I think that guy, I know we couldn't get anything else. We thought we were picking up a couple of good players, but none of these players has worked out. Ruff has been a disaster. And I know they were trying to catch lightning in the bottle with Alvarez. See the way the Braves, they have their prospects, they brought them up, they performed.
But you know what, Robert? I question the move of Alvarez, and we didn't question it that much on Friday because he's a top prospect in Major League Baseball. But he's just 20 years old, and they threw him nothing but breaking balls. He was hunting fastballs. He swung at the first pitch in all eight at-bats.
Yep.
And I think he was overmatched. And the Braves prospects, it wasn't, all right, here's a weekend. The whole division is on the line. Go play. That was putting a lot on this kid. There are not that many young players that could come into the cauldron like that and perform. It's just they don't exist.
And should Buck have recognized it early enough that, like, on Saturday, even though it's a lefty, have Vogelbach hit instead of Alvarez? Like, but then he probably gets killed if Vogelbach strikes out, and then it's, well, you should have brought the righty up. It's all easy to say after the fact, but is that something Buck could have recognized? Because was he an O for Michael because he was overwhelmed? Or, you know, you say, hey, listen, the Braves just got the better of him. I don't know. I don't know enough of him. He's a minor league player. But should Buck have done that and said,
well,
okay, we tried.
He had only had one game, though, of intel on him, you know, just the Friday. And then he pinch hit for him on Saturday or with him on Saturday.
I just think you have to work with. The criticism of Alvarez to me is more to the point of they made a mistake with Ruff. Because I really don't believe he was hurt, Michael. I think they did this because they realized that Ruff wouldn't have done any better.
And also it comes down to this. All of these young players, the Vientos and Alvarez that you're calling up, the Mets go into the trade deadline, and Billy Epler's kind of handcuffed because they refuse to trade their top five prospects. They're trying to build back their system. They want to have a sustainable system of youngsters like the Dodgers have. So once they said we're not going to trade our top five guys, well, then that takes away getting back a top five player. So they kind of want shopping at Filene's basement, and they got Ruff, and they got Vogelback, and they got Naquin. Nice players, but not needle movers. They just didn't do it, so they chose to keep their prospects and hope that they could get through. And all of it would have worked if Marte did not have his finger broken, I think.
I agree. I mean, this is, I don't want to say limited offensive team, but they're not a great offensive team, Michael. And I don't care what the numbers say, because there are times that that gets skewed by putting up a 10 spot every once in a while and changing it. But watching a team every day, they're not special offensively. They're good offensively.
And they don't hit home runs in the world. Everybody mocks teams that hit home runs. Well, the Braves hit home runs over the weekend. The Mets didn't hit enough home runs, and they haven't hit enough home runs all year. And the thing is that people build their team around home run hitting, like the team across the river, because they don't think that you could get 5-6 hits in a row against today's pitching in order to score 2 or 3 runs. It's easier to wait on a guy to make one mistake and one swing, get 3 runs. That's the way the sport's built, Don.
And it is, because there were times, Michael, over the weekend where they had runners on. Where if you the 3-run home run, you're waiting for the base hit, but then it takes another base hit and another base hit to be able to make up the ground. When you get a nice 3-run home run, it changes everything. And they just didn't get those kind of a bat. Braves did, and then the Braves tacked on. Like last night, that's a different game, 4-3 in the ninth inning rather than 5-3. It's a different world for Jansen at that point. But the tack on home run, they tacked on. The Mets didn't tack on. It just, there's a lot to point at, but was there a glaring error? Was there a glaring decision by Buck outside of maybe the organization sending up Alvarez? But again, that was out of desperation. Or did they just lose to a better team?
We will get back to the Met narrative and your phone calls as well, but now we want to shift to the Jets and their big win in Pittsburgh. It's time for the Robert Saleh Report on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Pepsi. Second road win this year, Coach, where you guys make this one wasn't improbable. The one in Cleveland was improbable. This had to impress you, the way your young quarterback engineered that final drive.
How you guys doing first?
You guys good.
Doing
good? How are you?
I can't complain. I thought we did a really good job. Obviously, the fourth quarter, usually when they play Renegade in the fourth quarter in Pittsburgh, it's usually the kiss of death. And I thought our offense and defense on all three phases really kept their calm, played within each other, played within ourselves, and made the plays that we needed to make to win the football game.
Did you feel like there was some rust that Wilson had to kick off early in the game?
You know, I thought we started fast. You know, he looked good early in the first quarter. We jumped out to that early lead. Which was good. It was that second and third quarter. It wasn't just him. There were some things where we were playing behind the sticks a little bit, and there were things that he needed to do better. There were things on the offensive line needed to do better. There was things that we could have done better as football coaches. But to stay within not letting plays linger and just going on to the next play and focusing on one play at a time. I really thought they all did a really good job of regrouping in the fourth quarter and stringing together two really good drives.
I'll tell you what, that impressed me is the way Vera Tucker was able to go to the left tackle spot. I mean, this guy has been a real solid player for you. And then because of injuries, he's moved around. That was a big move, I thought, and a big performance by him.
Yeah, he's a stud. He's got to be one of the better O-linemen in football. If he's not, he's damn near close to being. He'd been preparing for that moment as a worst-case scenario in the event, because we're just losing so many tackles. And for it to happen and for him to go out there with no flinch, lines up and plays the way he did, 100% on assignment, that didn't allow much production from the opposite side of the ball. I thought he was lights out. So
when you have to make changes and do what you did on the offensive line, how does that affect the play calling?
It does and it doesn't. There is a timing and a synchronization, if you will, with offensive line play, especially when you get into the run game and the pass game and all that stuff. And You know, with all the different movement, it does make it difficult for things to work. But at the same time, I thought, like I said, as the game went on, our guys just kept going one play at a time. And that fourth quarter, everybody was on the same page, operating at a very high level. And we all saw what could happen when Zach gets a little bit of time and he can set his feet and let the ball rip. It was pretty cool to see the against that football team in that stadium with that crowd. It was really, really cool to watch that fourth quarter.
All right, so how chapped were you with Lawson's penalty at the end of the second quarter?
Just all of it in general. The you know, the way that first half ended, obviously not the best end to a first half, from the interception to the penalty to the field goal to the 6-point swing. Not good, something that we've got to get fixed. And, you know, you've got your self-evaluation starting with me first and whether or not we should just run out the clock. But on the flip side, you want to be a team that's aggressive because you have a chance to lap somebody and you want to gut them. A touchdown there and get the ball to start the second half and another touchdown, it's 24-3 and you can wrap it up, you know. But and we want to get to that point. We want to have that mindset that when you can go for the jugular, you go for it. But at the same time, you know, you could always play the hindsight's 20-20 game. You could run the ball, kick the field goal, and it's 13-3. So a lot of things that we look at from an evaluation standpoint from our part. But then then on defensive side, just don't shoot yourself in the foot. We can still go in 10-3. Never hit the quarterback at all, really, on a Hail Mary when he lets that go. Just let him have it, and, you know, half should have been over. So it was just really poor execution on all our parts, starting with coaches.
Now, Coach, obviously there were some things, some mistakes I'm sure Zach would love to get back, the pick at the end of the first half, et cetera. But there was one play that stood out to me that made me feel good about Zach Wilson. I'm curious about your thoughts. The play when you guys did the pitch and he dropped it and then picked it up again and chucked it, it was such a heads-up sort of play to see from Zach. Were you impressed with that?
Yeah, the very underrated play. It could have been an absolute disaster. They sniffed it out. They had it read. Obviously, he dropped the ball, but to just get it, even just to have the power to be able to get it to the sticks where I think the line judge caught it, not the ball boy caught it. It was really, really good on his part and a very underrated play.
You rarely see a chest pass in a football game.
Nah, unless you're watching Kansas City.
Yeah. Breece Hall says he's getting better and he's going to be scary. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah, you know what? He had Breece had some really cool NFL runs. And by NFL runs, if you go back and watch the tape, making those DBs tackle him. And what I mean by that is we call it sideline finish or finishing your runs. Obviously, instead of running sideways where they can tackle you, you lower your shoulder and you put it right through their chest. And he did that about on 5 or 6 occasions and gained another 4 or 5 extra yards. Even that last run that got it to the 2, it was contact at, I believe, the 5, and he drove it to the 2-yard line. And then the next play, he gets in the end zone. But really pumped for him. And he's coming into his own, and Michael Carter's still right there. He's playing really, at a really high level, so the combination of the two of them is pretty good to have.
I know you like to keep things one game at a time, and I'm sure you still play the quarter game, right? Even though there's 17 weeks of trying to win each quarter, and you couldn't do that. But 2-2 and 1-3 are completely different things. So, going into this game, did you feel like you had to win just to change the complexion of the season? Do you think it was that important this early?
Yeah, I feel like every game is so important, right? Like the NFL, you don't have many games to give, so every game is like especially here, it's euphoria or disaster, right, or whatever it was that Bill Parcells said.
Right.
But regardless, you go into every game with a must win attitude, and it sounds cliche, but if you treat every game like a championship game, then you don't have to get up or you don't have to pull yourself up for whatever game presents itself. It's just you're already up. And so you treat every game with that same mindset and you trust that the result will end up. But, you know, every game is independent of itself and every game holds that same type of value to me anyway.
How's Max Mitchell? He's played so well. He's been such an uplifting story for you guys, and he was carted off yesterday. So what's the outlook?
Knock on wood, at the early the early prognosis from what I'm getting, I haven't gotten all of it yet, but that it's not season ending, and we're hopeful to get him back before the season's over. But again, I don't have the full details. That's about all I've got. So,
how big will Miami's game be?
Same thing. Every game's a championship game. It's a division opponent. They're loaded on the offensive side of the ball with speed everywhere. Teddy Bridgewater is a heck of a quarterback. I know Tua's out, but shoot, Teddy beat us 24-0 last year in Denver. So we've got our work cut out there. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, they're aggressive. They're opportunistic. They're a big play defense, and they've been playing together now for, I believe this is year four for them. So it's going to be a great challenge on both sides of the ball. They're 3-1 for a reason, and they're pretty darn good.
I'm also wondering, Coach, do you make sure to, like, look within and scout yourself when you see what happened with Tua and what happened with the league and the Players Association? Do you take a deeper look? Hey, are all of our protocols right?
Yeah, I think that's where I really like our performance staff. You know, every week I feel like they self-scout themselves every week. They're always looking at the practice loads and the player loads every day. We're just monitoring players to make sure that we're giving them what they need to make sure that we can prevent injury before it ever happens. And got a lot of faith in our doctors and all that stuff. When it comes to those, I just, you know, we had a couple of incidents yesterday, and I thought our guys did a great job handling it. They delivered the information. Full confidence in our performance staff and our doctors and our medical staff to be able to do things in the way it's intended to be done.
Well, congratulations on the win yesterday. Good luck on Sunday against the Dolphins at home. We appreciate you coming on with us as always.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that's the Robert Saleh Report brought to you by Pepsi. Jet fans, head over to your local grocer and stock up for Jets game day. Football watching better with Pepsi. Available at ShopRite. There you have it. We'll take your phone calls about the Jets, the Giants, people still wanting to talk about the Mets. We understand that is a big, tough weekend to digest. 1-800-919-3776, and Judd's still searching for 62. Last stop for the regular season is here in Texas, right behind me. If you're watching on Yes, you could see Globe Life Field or Park. I don't know what it's called. Is it Field or Park? I know it's Globe Life something. I'll find out before we go on the air with the game. It's right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Got the Mets and the Nats tonight at Citi Field, and the Yankees and the Rangers at Globe Life Field. It's unbelievable. You come to this complex, right? You've got this stadium, and the roof will be open tonight. It's about 87 degrees here. And the ball goes out at a higher rate, home run-wise, when the roof is open than the rate around Major League Baseball. Just thought I'd tell you that if you're looking for Aaron Judge. And then, like, right across the parking lot is the stadium that they left after it was open just 20 years. It's not torn down, so they use that for high school football. And on the other side of the parking lot is AT&T Stadium. Just amazing. And then there's a Six Flags water park.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I knew you'd like that.
Well, I'm good.
You're going to hit the water park?
The water park is where it's at.
Maybe between games of the doubleheader tomorrow, Peter.
No,
I'll be on the air.
That's right.
Maybe I'll be on the air from
the water park.
Yeah. Like it. That's Game Time, brought to you by Tullamore Dew Irish Whiskey. During the big games this season, enjoy a Tullamore Dew, the original triple blended, triple distilled, and triple cask matured Irish whiskey. Remember, when it's game time, it's Tully time. Please enjoy responsibly. Bigger win, Giants or Jets?
It's tough. I think I'll go first, if you don't mind, Don.
Sure.
I think I'm more impressed with the Giants win. They were both gritty, sort of gutsy wins. But what I liked about the Giants win was sort of looked like Dable listened to our show last week. They adapted the playbook in a way for Jones to make it work. They had the injuries at the end of the game and found a way to get through it. I think I lean towards the Giants.
Well, I think there's two questions here. It's kind of like the MVP or the best player. I think the more impressive win was the Giant win, because I think the Bears are better than the Steelers. And the Giants also had to hold on without a quarterback after both got hurt and had to kind of Jimmy switch things around. But I think the Jets was bigger. Because I really do believe, Michael, if they had lost against Pittsburgh, then pretty much the competitive portion of the season is over. The Steelers aren't very good. But 2-2 compared to 1-3, and that's what I asked Saleh at the end of the interview, Michael. 1-3? And then you lose to Pittsburgh? And are you beating Miami? And then it's 1-4, and then it kind of just spirals out of control. But now at 2-2, you're feeling good. You just had a win with your quarterback that's supposed to be your future. And then you feel better about the Miami game. And so I just think that the Giants, even if they had lost to the Bears, they'd still be 2-2. You know, what you kind of hoped they would be at the start of the season. Still disappointed they lost another game at home, but you're 2-2. Michael, this team 1-3, lose to Pittsburgh, and because I don't think the Steelers are a very good team. They had to bench their starting quarterback they were playing so bad. That I think the bigger win was the Jet win. The more impressive one, I thought, was the Giants.
Now, in terms of impressive points of each game, the final drive by Wilson looked like he was very comfortable and drove them almost the length of the field to score the go-ahead with touchdown. And then when Daniel Jones got hurt on the Giants side, just the calm and collected way that Dable dealt with it. He said, give me a grease board, and he's drawing a play.
Yeah.
Like he's in the parking lot, go down to the Johnny Pump and make a right and stuff like that. I thought that was brilliant. He turned it into a wildcat with Saquon Barkley as the quarterback. He had Daniel Jones in there as a wide receiver that didn't move because he was the only one with the device in his helmet that he could receive the plays from the sideline, but they just did it without panicking. Yep. And I think this is completely different than the Joe Judge regime where they would panic. They didn't they didn't have a quarterback, and they did not panic. I like that. I like that a lot.
And they were productive too, all right? I mean, With an actual quarterback, Michael, they took a knee at their own goal line against Washington last year, right? So, and without a quarterback, they're actually designed some plays and moved the ball downfield. They weren't dynamic by any stretch, but at least they got by. And also, can Chicago wake up? How many times do you got beat by the bootleg where you finally have to defend it? And then they finally made the adjustment at the half, but still weren't great. I thought the Giants' defense played very well, and I thought the offense put it together. Galladay is still a problem, by the way. I think he's just a non-entity now. I don't even know what you do with him.
Well, now he's not playing this week.
He's not. Yeah, it's just. But and he's still dropping passes. But still, that's a negative for another day. But they're 3-1. I still don't think they're a playoff team. But 3-1, still 3-1. And now you go to London, and it's going to sting. I guess Davis Webb's going to play because I don't think anybody after what happened with Tua last week, Michael, is going to play a quarterback after a concussion. All right, so I would think.
You would think not, Don.
I would think Taylor's off the table, and then we'll see what happens with Jones. But the best part of Jones is his scrambling ability. If he's got a leg injury, that's not going to work out too well.
And are we going to now be in the situation where we're having one of those Daniel Jones moments that he's had every year where you end up losing two or three games? Or is this going to be something quick and he's back this weekend? Or because they'll have to decide immediately.
Well, they're going to London. And all of a sudden that game doesn't become as daunting, right? Because, the Packers have been good, but you saw what the Patriots were able to do with a backup quarterback. So it doesn't seem like it's impossible. Although it's weird how things change, right? Jacksonville is no longer an easy win. So you just take them as you get them, right? Baltimore looks a lot easier than maybe Jacksonville.
I thought you nailed the Jacksonville game at first.
Of what, 14-0?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, wow. I thought you'd pulled a Michael and gotten a tip from someone.
No.
When I see Jacksonville out 14-0, I go, wow, really?
Now, Tyreek Hill has said something that it feeds off something that's bothered me for a long time. We'll come back. We'll take your phone calls. I'll tell you what Hill said, and the Jets are going to play him this weekend at MetLife. So stick around. It's going to be a great show, and we're on till 7 right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.